The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org. Good evening. Welcome, welcome. So I'd like to start us off tonight with a poem that it's not so uncommon to be read by Dharma teachers. And then I'd like to take a theme that we from the poem and build on it. So perhaps you've heard this before. The poem is called Autobiography in Five Short Chapters by Portia Nelson. Autobiography in Five Short Chapters by Portia Nelson. Chapter 1. I walk down the street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I'm lost. I'm helpless. It isn't my fault. It takes me forever to find a way out. Chapter 2. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place, but it isn't my fault. It still takes a long time to get out. Chapter 3. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it is there. I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I am. It is my fault. I get out immediately. Chapter 4. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Chapter 5. I walk down another street. This is a way that, just pointing to, right, there's this deep hole in the sidewalk, and these are different relationships to it. And we could say this autobiography, right, it's just this learning, just this recognition that we have to learn. We have to go to chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 before we can, like, finally realize, oh, actually, I don't even have to go down that street. So tonight I'd like to talk a little bit about chapter 2. Chapter 2 goes like this. I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I am in the same place, but it isn't my fault. It still takes a long time to get out. I just want to talk about this a little bit. There's this way in which, you know, we want to avoid or distract or pretend that we don't see it. Whatever the hole in the sidewalk is for us, whether it's finally doing that big yard or that job in the yard that we've been putting off, maybe it's having that difficult conversation with a coworker, or maybe it's finally getting around to get our finances in order, or maybe there's some emotional element that brings you to spiritual practice, this sense of things not quite right. Maybe some that can show up in so many different ways, a lot of grief or existential dread or confusion. There's like so many different ways in which there can be a hole in the sidewalk, probably as many different ways as there are people here, certainly. And so maybe one thing I would say is that, it's fantastic that IMC is this all-volunteer organization, right? That it's everybody, that everything that we do here is done by volunteers and donations. But sometimes there can be a way in which people feel like, oh, okay, I want to volunteer. And they start volunteering a lot, and they feel good. They're doing all this way to support the center. But then they find themselves overextending themselves and maybe even becoming resentful. Like, why am I doing all this? Or maybe there's this way in which they kind of get burned out and they feel like, oh, this is too much effort here. I'm just saying this. I happen to use IMC as an example, but it's anything like this, like anything that we might do that we feel like we want to spend some energy towards. And then we do too much and start to feel like, oh, this is too much. But they are saying that, well, I'm doing so much because I care. And because I want to be generous, I'm going to be generous with my time and money and not, or effort or whatever it is, whatever it is. But maybe there's a little truth there that they're afraid of feeling useless. Or maybe there's a way in which they feel like, well, if I do this, then I have value or something like this. Or maybe they're just afraid to say no because people won't like them. Or maybe there's this way of, they feel just a sense of obligation. Maybe it's just a habit. So in some ways, they're kind of pretending to not see the hole in the sidewalk. They're not seeing how they're afraid to say no. They want people to like them, or that they are just doing it because they feel like, well, I only have value as long as I'm doing something for somebody else. So there's these ways in which we might have these deep views that aren't even obvious to us, that are the hole in the sidewalk. And we might have this view that might even be more subtle. There's this way in which we have this idea that we should feel endlessly good all the time. Where I should be feeling, having pleasant experiences all the time. And anything that isn't a pleasant experience, for example, feeling like I only have value if I'm supporting somebody else or doing something for somebody else, right? That doesn't feel good. So if we have this view that we should feel good all the time, then any time in which we might feel this flicker of something that doesn't feel good, there's a way in which we can feel like, oh, I must be failing in life because it doesn't feel good. I must be doing something terribly wrong. Or the world is terribly wrong because I don't feel good. So something out there has got to get fixed and changed or something like this. And just not seeing that there's a subtle view that like things should be pleasant all the time. Of course, we wish that, but I mean, if we think logic about it, it doesn't make sense. Of course, it's not going to be pleasant all the time. Anytime when there's growth or learning, it requires that we like move into some, we get stretched a little bit into some new territory. And that stretching feels uncomfortable. And I mean, we have human bodies and they're vulnerable. They get injured. They get sick. We have loved ones and our relationships don't go as easy as we wish they would. Of course, there are times in which we don't feel comfortable. It's just part of what it means to be a human. But there's this way that I would say, even as a society, as well as, you know, as individuals, we don't really have some tolerance for this discomfort. Instead, we've created so many ways in which there can be like pain numbing or pain avoiding techniques in our life, right? These little rectangular gizmos in our pockets, right? There are these ways that they can just provide anything for you as soon as you want, right? Distraction or pleasure or whatever you'd like. But there isn't so much emphasis or so much, well, certainly not devices that will help us pain noticing. We're good at pain avoiding, but this pain noticing, like, oh yeah, that I feel uncomfortable. And maybe can I just be with this discomfort as best I can, as opposed to just bouncing off of it with distraction or avoidance. So I want to talk a little bit today about some ways in which we may doing some of this distraction or avoidance and not even be aware of it. And one way is with using spiritual ideas or spiritual, I'm using this word in quotes, ideas or practices as a way to maybe like sidestep or avoid some of these difficult emotions or these difficult experiences that we have. Might be using them to help us kind of like face maybe some of this, what Jack Kornfield calls the unfinished business of the heart. You know, some of the, I don't know what words to use for this, but maybe the tightness or that sense of like, oh, I don't want to touch that inside, or you know, some heaviness or some darkness or tightness or whatever it might be, whatever it might be. So there's this word that sometimes gets used for this. It's called spiritual bypassing. Maybe you've heard of this word. It might be, I'm not sure though, that Togyam Trumpa coined this word. I'm not sure though. That's what comes to mind. But it's this way in which we use the practices that are supposed to help us, support us with our problems, but we use them to avoid the problems or some of the issues. And I've done my share of this. Yeah. So I remember like being on a long retreat and just allowing, you know, on longer retreats, there's just the mind and the body just settle and settle and settle. So you can, a certain amount of concentration can arise. And I remember getting concentrated and then kind of feeling like, oh, look at me, look how concentrated I am. And then like at the end of the meditation, just feeling like all these emotions and a little bit of confusion, a little bit off balance. Like, oh, okay, I got to go meditate more. And then just going back in the hall, like, oh, look at me, I'm sitting more and getting more and more concentrated. And not realizing that I was just using the concentration, the settledness to just avoid whatever emotions were coming up. And, you know, that works for a while. It doesn't work forever. And I didn't even realize I was doing that. It wasn't until later I could see, oh yeah, I was kind of using this as a way to avoid what was happening. So we could say that this spiritual bypassing is a way that kind of like disconnects us from our feelings. I could say the uncomfortable feelings, or I could even say uncomfortable experiences. So maybe they're emotions, or I'll just use this word experiences. And sometimes it's helps us, it ends up like not allowing us to see the big picture, the like shields us from the truth in some kind of way of what's really happening. And maybe in psychological settings, they would use something like it's like a defense mechanism that's preventing us from seeing what's actually happening. But, and to be sure, there's lots of things that we could do to avoid or distract that could be more harmful than spiritual practices, right? But there's a way in which we could be causing harm to the world in so many different ways, being an internet troll or distracting ourselves and causing a little bit of harm to ourselves by spending too much time on the internet, not trolling, but scrolling or something like this. So spiritual bypassing is not about the practices we're doing. It's not about the practice. It's about our relationship with the practices or how we're using them. It's not the practices themselves, but maybe it's more like the way in which we're using them as a strategy to avoid discomfort. But what's so, it's kind of like a sophisticated strategy because not only does it allow us to avoid discomfort, it legitimizes the avoidance. It's like, oh, I should be doing this. I'm supposed to meditate a lot and get concentrated is a good thing. You know, and so just feel like I'm doing a more thing and maybe even get praise for it or you get, or maybe even yourself, you just think like, oh, look at me. Who cares about all that emotional stuff? I can sit for, you know, so long or whatever it is. It's quite something the way that we can, these things that we can come up with. And I would say this is very common. Very common. So if you find yourself later, like, oh yeah, I could see in the back that I was doing some things that maybe it was my way of avoiding, it's perfectly fine. It's perfectly fine. There's can be a way in which maybe it takes time for us to create the conditions in which we feel safe, or in which we feel we have resources to touch into some of these maybe deeper or more difficult emotions or experiences. So I'll say, just in general, like a gross generalization, there's two ways in which this spiritual bypassing can show up. And one is to just disconnect from experience. We could, like, maybe there's a way in which we have this aloofness, this kind of like, oh yeah, I'm chill, and just recognize, and we might call it, oh yeah, I'm equanimous, but really it's just being disconnected from experience. And maybe we don't know the difference between real equanimity and disconnection until this is pretty common, where we feel like, oh yeah, I'm balanced and I'm not upset about this. But then we realize that maybe there's just one little trigger, then whoosh, off we go, that we're really out of bounds, really angry, or all of a sudden really sad or something like this. But we might be thinking that we're economists. Or there's a way in which we disconnect and have this coolness and this aloofness from our experiences or other people or whatever it might be. Whereas equanimity, which is, you know, a beautiful state, it's really about connection and it's really about warmth. It's not about disconnection or coldness. So that's one way in which we could do spiritual bypassing, is which we get disconnected, meditating a lot, or just thinking to ourselves, oh, look how equanimous I am, when in fact we're not. That's one way. Here's a second way, is to be holding on to views, spiritual views, holding on to these ideas, or maybe we study a lot, you know, about the suttas in this tradition, for example. And there's this way that it turns out to just be more clinging. But even though that we're clinging to the view, somehow it feels like, oh, this is fine to be clinging. I've heard stories of Kalyanamitta groups. These are groups of people, Buddhist practitioners, that they just form kind of like social groups too. They just hang out together, or maybe they share something and they will spend time together. And some of them say, well, let's read the suttas together, and which is a beautiful thing to do. I love to do this. But, you know, that them having like a huge fallout because they're reading a passage or passages and arguing about what does it really mean. And you can't be a real practitioner if you think that, because it really means this. You know, this happens, right? This kind of blowing up and holding on really tight, and all of a sudden there's a, I'm right, and you're wrong, and, you know, it turns into some kerfluffle, or maybe even something bigger than that. So clinging to views, even like religious views, we know that clinging leads to suffering, leads to this, doesn't lead to freedom, doesn't lead to ease. Instead, clinging to these types of views leads to dogmatism and fundamentalism, and this is not the way to greater peace and freedom. This sense of, like, we know what's best, and I don't know what those people are doing over there, but clearly it's bad because they're not doing what we're doing. This is not the way to peace and freedom. That's just clinging to views. And that's just having, not even noticing the suffering that's associated with the feeling like you have to say that this is the only way that's possible, or that you have to other other people, make them kind of like dehumanize them in some way and think like, oh, well, if they have different views, then there must be something terribly wrong with them. So this clinging just leads to this divisiveness. And then your heart just starts to get tight and small. If the more people that we're kind of like throwing out of our hearts, the smaller it gets. This practice is about having a big heart. I am not saying that we're condoning all kinds of terrible, awful things that are happening, because there are a lot of terrible, awful things. But we're not condoning behaviors, but we're also not dehumanizing people and saying, oh, they're just wrong. And because we know, or I know what's right. We're just saying, this is what works for me. And I can imagine that this person is causing harm because they must have a lot of suffering. If what they're doing, if it makes sense for them to be causing that suffering, then how they must be having a lot of suffering if their view is that that's what to harm others is a good idea. So there's this way in which we might consider that views, or we could say opinions, notions, ideas. I'm using this word views to represent all this bucket of words. And we could say that they occur along a spectrum, and the spectrum is along the degree of clinging to them. So I was describing when there's a lot of clinging, and this is the dogmatism and fundamentalism and the self-righteousness and all this kind of thing. Somewhere over here in the middle are views that the Buddha pointed to that are helpful and supportive. And we know that the Eightfold Path starts with views. So as a way to have an orientation towards more freedom. And over here on this end of the spectrum, in fact, we would even say outside of the spectrum is where freedom is, complete freedom, no holding to views, even the subtle ones. And so we can say that there's more ease and freedom as we kind of like move towards less and less clinging. Even clinging to views, right? We all know the second noble truth, right? Clinging leads to suffering. But there's a way in which we might not be noticing how we're clinging to views, and this clinging to views, religious views, Buddhist views, is a way in which it's allowing us to not touch into and experience and see some of the more difficult, uncomfortable experiences in our life. Maybe what brought you to spiritual practice to begin with. Not everybody, but a lot of people come to spiritual practice because they have difficulties, they have suffering. So, we could say that spiritual bypassing, it's kind of like that you have this idea that you like to go up the mountain and you see a trail that goes up, but it looks pretty steep. And you see this other trail that looks like, okay, it's just going to like maybe do some switchbacks and go around the mountain. So you decide to take the other trail, not realizing that it just loops around and around and around. And it's not like actually going up. So we could say this autobiography in 5 chapters that I read before, right? That was one that was going up. There was learning. So I am not saying that we have to take the steepest trail. I'm just using this story as a way in which we might feel like, okay, I'm just going to take a shortcut and go with what seems pleasant and easy. But right, I mean, spiritual practice isn't always fun and easy, right? Because it requires us to stretch ourselves and let go of things that feel sometimes not so easy to let go of. And it turns out that we actually don't do the letting go. Things let go of themselves, it turns out, mostly. But Maybe that's a topic for another talk. So how can we do this? Like, how can we notice this and not be doing spiritual bypassing, or only do spiritual bypassing in a way, like even to, maybe we can't stop doing it, but maybe there's a way we can just notice, like, oh yeah, I'm not ready. I just don't feel ready to walk up this mountain or do some of these things. And that's perfectly fine. That's perfectly fine. We all start where we are, and we all work with what's happening then. There's absolutely no requirement for things to be done at a certain pace or in a certain order or anything like that. Because I don't want to send the message that, okay, jump into the most difficult thing, that thing that you absolutely want to avoid, you must do that. That's not what I'm saying. So what I'm saying is, can you bring mindfulness to all areas of your life, including your spiritual life? Because, you know, mindfulness is about being with what is. And if we find ourselves like avoiding uncomfortable feelings, that's not being with what actually is. And we sometimes just acknowledge the loneliness, the fear, the anger, the sadness, the confusion. I'm not saying we have to jump right in, but maybe it's helpful to just recognize that they're there sometimes. I feel sad. I'm really beepity beep beep angry, or something like this. Is there a way that you can recognize what's happening and, as best you can, allow it to be there? Like, yeah, anger feels like this. It feels like heat in the face. Feels like tightness in my hand. It feels like there's a fire in the belly kind of thing, or whatever it is for you. Allow it as best you can. Feel it in the body. It turns out this is such a tremendous support. We want to think and think and think and figure things out and solve the problems, and I'm going to work on myself, which really means I'm just going to think more about this. It works a little bit, but the way in it to really metabolize and shift and have things be different is to, as best we can, be embodied with them and let the thinking take care of itself. But can we feel the tightness in the hands when there's anger, for example, and just be with the bodily experience with care and respect? Like, this is my experience right now. And the thoughts are going to, but no, you have to fix this. And maybe there's a way you can trust that you don't have to fix it right now. Can you just recognize and honor your experience and feel it in the body? It'll be uncomfortable, but it's not going to be terribly uncomfortable. And if it is terribly uncomfortable, then you can stop and go do something else. But just to allow, like, oh yeah, the anger feels like this. The loneliness feels like heaviness, or maybe there's a crumpled or collapsed feeling. So to work with bypassing, spiritual bypassing, is to bring some mindfulness to our life and notice when some of these uncomfortable feelings arise. And as best we can we recognize them, allow them, feel them, and trust that you don't have to fix it that moment. There's a way it's the bouncing off. It turns out to be distracting, the way that we're distracting ourselves so often with, like, oh, this is uncomfortable. Okay, well, I better go watch that video on attachment theories, or I don't know, something like this, or internal family systems. You know, all these are fantastic things, but there's a way in which we just immediately want to jump off and do that, you know, learn something rather than be with the experience. So there's also a way in which we can apply some of our spiritual practice is to recognize that some of the difficult emotions might also have as part of them or integrated with them or born out of a wish for yourself or for others to be happy. And that maybe this is part of your difficult emotion, or I'm using the word difficult emotion, the whatever is being avoided, but maybe there's some compassion there. Maybe that's what's underneath the difficulty. Your wish for other people to be happy, wish for yourself to be happy. And can you recognize this compassion there? This wish for others to be happy has warm-heartedness in it. It has care in it. It has respect in it. Can you honor that as well? So there might be something really difficult or even just mildly difficult, but there also might be some warm-heartedness that's part of it. Can we also acknowledge the warm-heartedness? So often we collapse into this, to the difficulty, and want to fix it and solve it with our minds and, you know, all this kind of stuff. I'm not saying those are terrible, bad things to do. I'm just saying part of it could maybe is just recognize the warm-heartedness, or maybe there's a wish for the world to be a better place, to be safe for you and for others. Can you also honor the beauty of the care for that as part of your experience? Maybe you can sit with that warm-heartedness, that compassionate wish, as part of a way to be with your experience and be with, maybe we might say, in a use some of the spiritual things, the mindfulness and compassion, to be with what's uncomfortable. And then I'll end with reading this chapter, or this poem again. I love this poem. I just think it's so clever and playful, and it's just so evocative. With just not so many words, tells a lot. Autobiography in 5 Short Chapters by Portia Nelson. Chapter 1. I walk down the street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I am lost. I am helpless. It isn't my fault. It takes me forever to find a way out. Chapter 2. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place, but it isn't my fault. It still takes a long time to get out. Chapter 3. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it is there, but I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I am. It is my fault. I get out immediately. Chapter 4. I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Chapter 5. I walk down another street. So I'll close there. And I'll open it up to see if there's some questions or comments. Thank you.
So I have a question. Would it be helpful to hold on to certain things really tightly? Like, for example, I say to myself, okay, no matter what happens, I'm going to stick with my morning meditation practice, or I'm going to stick with the Dharma, I'm going to stick with IMC. Like, sometimes holding on to something like be helpful.
Yes, absolutely. Right. And that's more a commitment, I would say, rather than when I'm talking about clinging, like I'm doing this with my hand. And maybe there is a sense of holding on, but maybe there's also a sense of this is support. And there might be a time in which it feels like, I don't need to go to IMC every week or something like that. But yes, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you, Matt. Anybody else have a question or a comment?
I have a question and a comment. The question, and I think they're unrelated. The question is if you could sort of operationalize a little bit more warm-heartedness. And then the comment is on the word relaxing and how differently people can approach relaxing, I think. There's the relaxing, like, I think of Tara Brach, radical acceptance, you know, just relaxing into your experience, whatever it is, like without resistance. Mm. And then there's the relaxing, like, oh, come on, relax, don't make it such a big deal. Take a deep breath, which to me can facilitate some of the avoidance. Mm. Like trying to get away from some experience.
Oh.
And I'm almost wishing there was a different word for relaxing, because I feel like it can be used in very, very helpful ways, but also ways that are promoting the avoidance.
Oh, I see. So that Tara Brach relaxing is to put down the resistance to the experience, which is what I'm trying to point to, but there's also relaxing, like kind of like just chill out. Just is that kind of a with a little bit of an edge to it that way. And so your question is about the is there another? Yeah, what is the question?
I think that was more of a comment.
Okay,
about more the relaxing.
Okay, thank you. So then you're like to operationalize this idea of warm-heartedness. Yeah. I just finished teaching a warm-hearted retreat. It's a metta practice. Are you familiar with this word metta?
Yeah.
And I'm actually going to connect a little bit what you said here, because I would say this Tara Brach's idea to relax into is to not have resistance. And I would say warm-heartedness is also about not having resistance. There's a way in which I'm doing this with my hands in front of my chest. There's a way in which we armor ourselves up in some kind of way because we don't want to be vulnerable or hurt, or we don't want to feel our inner life, or we don't want people to harm us. And I would say warm-heartedness is a way, in whatever way makes sense, to soften a sense of armor and instead allow a sense of care, which I would say is naturally there when the armor starts to soften and go away. It's there, this warmth, care. I would also use the word respect and goodwill as these words. They're all in the family. You can choose a single word that resonates more. And they're all there, but it can also be helpful there to cultivate them, to stoke the fire, so to speak, to make that flame a little bit bigger. And then are you asking me, like, how does one specifically do this?
Sure.
Are you familiar with metta practice? Have you heard of
this? A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. So I'll just say briefly, there's a number of ways you can do this. It's where where I recommend that people always start. It doesn't matter if you've been doing it for decades. I recommend that they always start with bringing to mind a lovable being, an uncomplicated relationship. So for most people, because it's often imaginary, kittens, puppies, babies, or maybe it's grandkids or a coach you had when you were a kid. You know, so it's not Yeah, the emphasis is on uncomplicated. So sometimes people we have relationships with, we have a, you know, a mixture. Of course we do. So bringing to mind a being, it can be imaginary or real, that in which there's just naturally a sense of, oh, for me it's kittens. I'm literally like just imagining kittens. And there's a, like, oh, it's, I don't know, I can't help it. I just have the soft spot for that. And then I connect with them. I kind of like allow the, this, I'm pointing to my chest again, this softening that's happening. And then to support the connection, we say phrases. The words are not so important of the phrases. The phrases are just a way in which we just come back again and again to the warm-heartedness. So we say, these are classical phrases, but an invitation for people to change them if they want. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. And so just like with mindfulness, we just keep on coming back to the breath. We use the phrase to just keep on coming back to the heart. So there we go. You asked a simple question, and I gave a mini Dharmette right there on a, but I hope that was all right.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Does anybody else have a question or a comment?
So I had a sort of mini experience with a small hole in the sidewalk driving here tonight. All it was that I started to feel uneasy, and there was some slight anxiety or so on, and I had no idea why, but it was very clear in my body. So I asked myself a question, okay, what is the right way to deal with this? What's the right effort? And my first thought was to turn on the radio, but I rejected that one. So the next one was that maybe I should dig into my day or the last week or the people I know and see what is it. But then I thought, I'll come up with a good intellectual explanation and I'm going to fool myself. Huh? So then I said, all right, the other thing is just don't do anything, but just sit with it and feel it. And I did actually chose that one. But then the problem was, I thought, told myself, I'm lazy. It would have been so much more difficult to figure out what's going on. I took the easy way out. So, and even at this moment, I don't know what would have been the right effort.
And here's the beautiful thing. You don't need to know. Because do you have the anxiety feeling right now?
Actually, I agree. That's another thing I came up with, that since neither one is superior to the other, at least not in this moment.
Neither one, like the thinking or being in the body? When you say neither one, what are the two options?
In a sense that what is the right effort which will help to understand and avoid that particular hole? In the sidewalk.
Yeah. Yeah, it turns out, right, we think that we understand something, and then, you know, maybe a year later, a day later, 10 minutes later, like, oh, no, it was really this. And then we can say, oh, no, it actually was that, right? These ideas that we have about our anxiety, often do we really know in the way that we think we do? So the invitation here is we don't need to know. And therapy is something that's a different modality. With here, I would say, certainly in meditation, and I just find in my life, just to honor and respect the experience comes up and ends, and if there's something to know, it gets known. It just, beep, like, oh, yeah, right, I shouldn't have sent that email earlier, or, you know, whatever it is. It turns out that we don't have to do as much intellectualization as we often like to do. I just offer this. Speaking from somebody, right, who loves to do that kind of stuff. So thank you. Thank you all. And I'm wishing you a wonderful rest of the evening and safe travels home. Thank you.